aboard, you people. Starship Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis off for another day of broadcast insolence.
Congratulations to Chicago, best restaurant city in America, Bon Appetit magazine.
Yeah!
And we knew that already, so... Thanks for recognizing us.
Right.
Bon Appetit.
I do appreciate it. We were just talking about restaurants right now during the break. This is such a golden age of culinary excellence in Chicago, because you've got it's not just steakhouses anymore, although we led the nation in that when that was the hottest thing, and they're still great.
Still great.
But there is, in terms of like the chef-driven concepts, just doesn't get any better.
No, it doesn't.
Anywhere.
And it's really cool how Bon Appetit basically says that. They say, they've started to attract attention for their high-end restaurants like Alinea and the ones that have received all the awards over the last few years. But they even spotlighted our ethnic restaurants and how some new ethnic chefs have stepped up their game. And there's a suburban food court that hosts one of the most exciting places to eat. And they really they dug in deep and showed what the city has to offer.
Yeah. You can go to I used to say this, I always said it about Chicago. You go to New York, it's kind of true in New York. It's definitely true in New Orleans. You know, these are the great food cities in North America, Montreal too. You go to almost walk into any little restaurant somewhere and you're going to get something shockingly great. And that is really true. That has become
so
really true. Even the little family-owned restaurants have had to, in order to survive, they've had to kick it up.
Yeah, no question. And it's just, everyone's game is elevated. It's almost like the chefs sort of challenge each other and created this great culture. It's amazing. You're right. It's hard to get a bad meal here.
So true.
Makes me hungry just thinking about it. Reading all the menus here from like the Publican. Got the dessert place I've never been to before.
All right, stop it now.
God, it looks so good.
All right. Let's see here. Let me run down a few things for you. I've got the list in front of me.
Okay.
We have got, let's see. All right. Coming up at 3:40, we'll talk about North Korea. Can I just play, for those who might not have heard it yet, this is what the president's response was to the story today. This is kind of an interesting problem, I think, for the United States of America, but also for the president in terms of how he wants to address the information here. He retweeted a story on the Fox News channel about this, but it was classified information that he retweeted, which is, to his point about leaks and when it comes to international security and life and death situations, that's, he doesn't like leaks about his finances or the Russia investigation, but he was okay retweeting a leaked story about the fact that the Koreans, North Koreans, may have created a miniaturized thermonuclear warhead capable of being carried atop an ICBM.
The president's allowed to do that. He declassifies something, but it was so classified that Nikki Haley, doing the morning TV this morning, wouldn't talk about that because she said, "That's classified. I can't respond."
She was not aware that the president had just retweeted it and talked about how dangerous it was to actually have that leaked. And then while she was saying that, the president was then retweeting the story from Fox News Channel. So it's an irony here. This story comes out. Obviously, North Korea had threatened us a few days ago. Kim Jong-un threatened us with, using language similar to the kind of language that was thrown back at him today. But basically there would be severe penalties and all the kind of stuff that Kim Jong-un said. But then the president at an event today, he was at an event on the opioid crisis, as a matter of fact, said this.
North Korea best not make any more threats to the United States. They will be met with fire and fury like the world has never seen. He has been very threatening beyond a normal statement. And as I said, they will be met with fire, fury, and frankly, power, the likes of which this world has never seen before. Thank you.
And we've seen some things before. I got chills when I heard that because you thought about Japan, Nagasaki, Hiroshima. I mean, scary. Those are that's scary. Scary to hear.
I wonder how the rest of the world feels about that, right? It's, yeah, I mean, it's, sure. It's scary for us to hear, and we feel rather emboldened, I think, here because he's probably unlikely to be able to deliver that nuclear weapon. If he does have, if that's all true, he's still probably unlikely to be able to successfully deliver that to the American homeland. But there are other issues. There is the economic crisis he could throw the world into by firebombing Seoul, Korea, or taking out Japan, parts of Japan, Tokyo. You know, he's even just with his conventional weapons, within 15 minutes, it is said that he could create a firestorm in Seoul, Korea that would level the city.
Right after the president delivered those remarks, the U.S. stocks did fall, and the measure of volatility, the VIX, spiked higher after he delivered that warning. So,
right.
Obviously,
yeah.
Already starting to take notice.
All right. We will be joined by Ben Bradley to talk about this and other things that are happening. And also Tom Colina is going to join us, director of policy for Plowshares. That's an organization that looks at these kinds of issues. And what does this actually mean for the United States of America? That's all coming your way in this hour. And then the fun begins.
try to
just get the news in at the top and then get the fun in a little bit later. First, Violetta Powdermedic's got the WGN Traffic Trouble Spots.
CLTV now in HD. Watch the TV simulcasts of Steve Cochran and this show right now, in fact, along with all the latest news, weather, traffic, all in high def, now on Comcast Xfinity, channel 352, in case you're wondering.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Speaking of wondering, here is Ben Bradley. You can see on the CLTV. He's in the WGN TV newsroom on Bradley Place. It's Bradley from Bradley Place. What's happening?
Easy to remember.
Hello, Rokan and friends. Good to be with you this afternoon.
Thank you so much, Mr. Bradley. All right. How are we preparing for thermonuclear war? Anything? We got anything?
Well, in that same media availability. Yes, where President Trump promised to unleash fire and fury upon North Korea if they don't get their act together. He was also talking about the opioid crisis, and that's something we're going to be talking about on the WGN Evening News beginning at 4 o'clock. 1,800 people died in Illinois last year from opioid-related deaths. Just in the last 3 years, there's been a 70% increase. And they actually think these numbers nationally could be pretty underreported because a lot of different counties and municipalities are still struggling with how to differentiate in their reporting and classification of these deaths.
So are they counting heroin overdoses?
Well, that's a great question. So, for example, in Cook County, they don't have a specific category for opioid deaths. They have a category for heroin deaths. They have a category for fentanyl deaths. And as you know, some people have both in their system. So that's where they think there's some confusion that comes into play. All in all, there's about 1,000 people.
So are they double reported?
Some cases, yeah. They have both items in their system. I just got off the phone with the Cook County Medical Examiner's Office spokesperson, and we were talking about that exact issue. Will County's done a pretty good job on their website of specifically classifying and tracking heroin deaths and other drug-related deaths like that. But, yeah, first they got to figure out how to track it nationally. But so far the numbers show it's only increasing. President Trump summoned his Health and Human Services Secretary to his New Jersey golf club today to talk about it. And the president's message, interestingly enough, guys, sounded a lot like what we heard out of the Reagan White House in the 1980s. Just say no. Let me read you a quote from President Trump today on opioids. He says, "So if we can keep them from going on, and maybe by talking to youth and telling them no good, really bad for you in every way, but if they don't start, it'll never be a problem."
Well, I don't think that anybody goes to them and goes, "This is great for you." They're like, "You're going to like this now." But, I mean, people know that it's death. One of the interesting issues that has developed here, at least medical professionals are looking at this, people who have been prescribed opioids in the first place, there is such incredible regulation now that surrounds those kinds of drugs. You know, your OxyContin and, you know, that whole classification of drugs. That people become addicted to it, and then they decide when they try to go get refilled or they seek the drugs that they can no longer get, that's when they turn to street versions of it and then eventually end up on a street version of fentanyl or a street version or heroin, right? And then that's unregulated. You don't know what the the dosages are going to be. We learned in the death of Prince that he had a lot of different prescriptions in his house. He was able to get the prescription grade stuff, but there was confusion in the bottles about what the actual dosages were. Mm-hmm. Which happens to people as well.
And he had the hip problem, too, so he wasn't taking them recreationally necessarily. He was taking them to help with issues that he had with a bad hip. And you're right. I mean, trying to get a hold of these. My husband has been prescribed them because of his illness right now. And you can't go and pick them up for someone else. He can't pick up more than a couple of days' worth at once. And there are all these regulations. And yet people are still getting them, and obviously getting them in mass.
Yeah. All right, Ben, we got to run for some breaking news here. So thank you very much. I know you're going to run as well. Thank you. See you on 4, 4, 5, 6. And
after the Sox game.
Yes, after the Sox, whenever that is.
Whenever that is.
Yes. Sox are at 7 o'clock tonight. All right, thank you very much.
Thanks, Ben.
Bro Collins Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. We're going to keep you up to date on all the breaking news here. A lot of it. Shooting apparently on the Bishop Ford, the northbound Bishop Ford, mm-hmm. Which had all lanes blocked. They're trying to get people past that. And then we have the death of Glenn Campbell. More of that coming up in the top 5 at 5 and throughout the news today. Glenn Campbell, who obviously, for those who are familiar, had been struggling with Alzheimer's disease for the last decade. Mm. And there was a really amazing documentary done about him in that period. And he recorded his last album actually in the throes of Alzheimer's, but yet in one of the great ironic and tragic twists of that disease can offer. He was able to perform masterfully, but wasn't aware of what he was doing.
It was
a pretty interesting, and his art. I think there's a lot of people of the younger generations who are not sure who he is or what his accomplishments or what his contribution was. But if you're, if you're a baby boomer, or even a Gen Xer, an older Gen Xer. You may remember his TV show, and he starred in the movie called True Grit, the original True Grit. He was a constant presence on television in the 1970s into the 1980s, and a really amazing artist. Even if you didn't like country music, he played with so many other bands, you didn't realize what his contributions were. If you're a Beach Boys fan, He was sort of the secret weapon that the Beach Boys used as a guitarist on Pet Sounds, which is goes down in history as one of the top 25 albums of all time.
Did he write for other bands, or did he?
He was not really much of a writer. He was a musician and singer. Mm-hmm. He did a lot of other people's work in terms of writing, but the Beach Boys talk about, Brian Wilson talks about what Glenn Campbell's contribution was. It was amazing. We're going to play we'll play that for you a little bit later on. Very, very, very special stuff.
Very cool. Sorry to hear that.
It's our obviously thoughts and prayers are with his family, mm-hmm. and many of whom have been taking incredible care of him in these last number of years. Have been very, very difficult.
I bet.
Glenn Campbell dead at the age of 81. All right. We go now. Tom Colina is going to join us. Tom, we appreciate you being with us from Plowshares. And obviously, the rhetoric has heated up here concerning North Korea. The president, just within the last 2 hours, made a very dramatic statement. I want to play that one more time for people who might have missed it, and then I want to get your reaction to it, if we can, Tom. Here you go.
North Korea best not make any more threats to the United States. They will be met with fire and fury like the world has never seen. He has been very threatening beyond a normal statement. And as I said, they will be met with fire, fury, and frankly, power, the likes of which this world has never seen before.
Pretty chilling to hear that.
Tom, your thoughts on that?
Well, first of all, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me. There's an old saying in American foreign policy, which is speak softly and carry a big stick. That is not speaking softly. And I would say that is exactly what the situation does not need right now, is more rhetoric, more hyping of the threat, more ratcheting up of the tension. It's exactly what we don't need. North Korea knows that the United States can obliterate them. They're not crazy. They're well aware of that. They're deterred from acting because they know that the United States has overwhelming power. We don't need to tell them that. And I frankly don't understand why the president feels he needs to remind them of something they already know. Because all this does is push us further away from what we need to do, which is actually sit down with the North Koreans and figure this out. The big danger right now is that we have two inexperienced, bombastic leaders that are now facing each other down with nuclear weapons. And it's a dangerous situation, not because North Korea is going to attack us. They know much better than to do that. They are not crazy. They are not suicidal. But that this kind of rhetoric can ratchet up the level of tension, and we could have an accident, a mistake, a miscalculation, a misunderstanding that leads to conventional war that could ratchet it up to nuclear war. That's the real danger, is that we'll stumble into catastrophe. And the way to avoid that is not by making threats and not by casting about irresponsible rhetoric, but by talking so that we both understand where we're coming from.
You know, people just hearing it and maybe not seeing it, I was interested to see it, the president delivering that address, because he was reading from a statement. These weren't extemporaneous comments. And I can only imagine that there were other members of his team, potentially generals and others, who contributed to this statement, which is indeed a strategy, a threatening way of approaching this whole thing. How many people do you think were involved in that? And how does you're saying you don't agree with this strategy, but what do you think might be behind this?
I really don't know. I really don't understand. If you look at what the Trump administration strategy is, the only thing you can say about it is that there is no strategy. That it's all over the map. You have Secretary Tillerson saying we want to talk to North Korea. You have National Security Advisor McMaster talking about military action. You have Vice President Pence saying we don't want to talk to North Korea. And now you have Trump saying that we're going to, turn you into a sea of fire, which sounds like the kind of things that North Korea might say. Mm-hmm. There is no strategy, as far as I can tell. Threatening North Korea is not a strategy.
Is it effective in any way, do you think? I mean, obviously the North Korean people will not be aware of it, or if they are made aware of it, they'll be made aware of it in terms of proof as to why they need to be ever vigilant. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that affects Kim Jong-un or his regime, his generals?
Sure. This will play right into Kim Jong-un's hands to further repress his people because of, the American threat. And he can turn around and say to his people and his generals, look, I was right. Those Americans are up to no good. They want to blow us up. And now we need to expand our nuclear arsenal. It has no purpose or effect other than that. It's not going to make the North Koreans say, oh, well, I guess we should, give up the ghost and get rid of our nukes. No, it doesn't serve that purpose at all. And so the question is, what would serve that purpose? What would get the North Koreans to ratchet down the threat? And it's got to be the United States reaching out and saying, hey, we now both are vulnerable to the danger of accidental nuclear war, stumbling into catastrophe. That's a danger we both share now. And the only way we're going to get around that is to talk about it. We need to make sure we understand where the red lines are. If you step here, this is going to be the response. If we step there, that's what you're going to do. We need to understand that so we both understand what not to do so we don't stumble into war. And you don't get there by threatening each other.
And how does that get accomplished? I mean, who goes? How does it? Is it generals? This can't be a top-to-top, right? You don't want Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un on the phone necessarily.
It's situational. I mean, if you think about the Iran deal, and how President Obama reached out to the Iranians, it was very back channel. it was secret. You know, they met in some neutral third country with senior officials, but not the top officials, to just sort of quietly sort of discuss whether talks were even possible. And then from there, you know, things went more official and more public. So this has to start small. It has to start, you know, off the front pages. You certainly aren't going to do this, you know, president to president through press releases, right? This has got to be a quiet, you know, this is how diplomats like to work, quiet in the back room. You know, let's establish some shared principles, like we don't want to blow each other up, like neither one of us can win a nuclear war, so we want to avoid a nuclear war. These are the kind of things that the United States did with the Soviet Union, you know, back in the bad old days of the Cold War.
Right.
The first things they said is, you know, nuclear war can never be fought. Nuclear war can never be won, so it must be never be fought. And now let's think about ways to prevent accidental war. You know, North Korea is not the Soviet Union. Okay, I mean the numbers are not even comparable, but they have this capability, which again doesn't mean.
I want to go back to this just for a second, Tom. I don't mean to cut you off, but let's talk about what happened today. What was leaked today was a story about the miniaturization of a nuclear warhead that was capable of being. It was so small, capable of being carried by an ICBM. And when we say small, this is all in relative terms, right? But it's small enough that you can put it on the head of a missile. It appears that they still don't necessarily have the reentry circumstance figured out in North Korea for an intercontinental ballistic missile. It goes up in, you know, out into space essentially, and then has to come back through, and it has to, you know, be heat shielded and also have the GPS or, you know, some sort of guidance system that allows it to go somewhere even near its target. There's all kinds of things that we're not sure, at least. I mean, we keep hearing from the people who look at these things that they may be away from that. But we thought they were 2 years away from having a miniaturization process for their nuclear weapon. Now, this one organization, the Defense Intelligence Agency, seems to believe that they are there. So when we talk about this, is this a surprise to you? Do you believe the DIA's report?
I have no reason not to believe it. Obviously, I'm not privy to it, haven't seen it, but I have no reason not to believe it. We were all thinking that this would come within the next year or two. And, you know, North Korea is not a country, you should not underestimate them. I mean, every time they say they're going to do something, they basically do it. They're quite predictable. They do what they say. So I'm not surprised by this. But it doesn't really matter whether it's true today or it'll be true in a year from now. The situation is, if we don't engage with the North, it's just going to get worse. I mean, this is not the worst it can get. I mean, they have maybe 20 nuclear weapons. In a year from now, they could have 200. So there's a real reason to talk to the North now to stop this threat from getting worse, and again, to stop accidents and miscalculations that could lead to war. And that is what the most important thing we need to do now.
What do you think about Kim Jong-un and his intentions with threatening the United States recently and his verbal threats about physical action and the U.S. will suffer and the kinds of things he said?
This is tit for tat, right? So North, I mean, you know, it's like you could go far back and decide who started this all. But so last month, North Korea does the two long-range missile tests. So just this past weekend, the U.N. Security Council passes sanctions. So now North Korea is ratcheting it up with its threats to the United States, and now Donald Trump is going back again at threats at North Korea. So it just tit for tat, back and forth. It's like watching a ping pong match. But the problem, it's not ping pong. It's very serious. This is nuclear ping pong. And the more those threats ratchet up, the closer you get to some sort of stumble that leads us to war. So we have to stop the sort of meaningless rhetoric. You know, it's just not useful. What is a constructive way forward? And it goes to the bottom line that I don't think the Trump administration has a plan. They have rhetoric, they have statements, but they're not. We cannot talk to the North effectively unless there's one voice coming from the United States. We have four or five voices coming from the United States, all saying different things, all at the highest level. That is no way to run a railroad. We will not have successful dialogue with the North if they don't know who to listen to. Now, I'll also add another thing is they, for this to work, the North has to trust that the United States will back up whatever agreement we eventually reach. Yet here you have President Trump openly threatening to pull out of the Iran deal that was negotiated 2 years ago. And he's threatening to pull out of it, even though Iran is fully complying with it. So how can the what's the North going to think looking at Donald Trump and saying, well, you're pulling out of the deal that your country just negotiated with Iran for no cause. Why should we negotiate with you now?
Yeah.
So the Trump administration has to get its act together if it really wants to fix this.
All right. Tom, thanks very much. Appreciate it. Tom Colina.
Thanks, Tom.
My pleasure. Anytime.
Thank you. All right. Right now, Violetta Powder-Medic's got the WGN traffic trouble spots.
I've been walking these streets so long, singing the same old song. I know every crack in these dirty sidewalks of Broadway, where hustle's the name of the game. And nice guys get washed away like the snow and the rain. There's been a load of compromising on the road to my horizon. But I'm gonna be where the lights are shining on me. Like a
Glenn Campbell, dead at the age of 81 today. Tom Skilling joins us right now from the WGN-TV Weather Center.
Yeah, that's really sad. Mm-hmm. You know, I mentioned that here in the office, and some of the young people said, now, what were his songs? And it didn't occur to me that, you know, he was such a giant in the music business, and people of our age know who it is. But he did a lot of that Jimmy Webb music, which was just beautiful. And by the time I get to Phoenix and Wichita Lineman and stuff like that, they also, he and his wife let the, was it CNN who did that or a documentary?
CNN did it, yeah. Well, CNN Films
did
I'll Be Me, which is a documentary about Alzheimer's. His recording of his last album. And he was in the throes, pretty deeply in the throes of Alzheimer's. He sat down for interviews, though, and they would try to catch him in the moments of lucidity, and then at his own realization. It's a startling film. It's actually
it really is
one of those things that when you, if you have people affected by it and friends or family or whatever it happens to be, it in some ways it's a way of explaining to people who don't understand the disease how it works, but it also shows that, you know, the humanity of people who are suffering with it, that they're not totally lost. And to me the most amazing part was that he was able to perform, but wasn't sure what he was doing.
They said that he would singing was such second came to him as second nature that he could remember the words to the song and the music itself, and yet he wouldn't know where he was, you know, performing.
That's interesting.
And there was, I remember they had some psychiatrists who talked to her, psychologist, neurologist, I guess, who talked about it, and they said that, you know, whatever there is about the way the brain retains information and the devastation of that disease is such that, you know, it seems like certain bits of information become
just stick with you
longer than others.
There's this interview in Rolling Stone with his daughter who basically said you know, that he toward the end was reduced to doing a lot of cover songs of Bob Dylan and others, but those were like the influencers of his career, and they were so ingrained in his memory because they were the first things he picked up and learned to play on the guitar, that they were one of the last things he started to lose.
You know, this is one of these diseases, and there are so many of them, breast cancer and diseases like
that.
By
the way, we should also mention this breaking news, too, that we, since we're going to go down this road, that Chicago Blackhawks great NHL Hockey Hall of Famer Eddie Olczyk has just been diagnosed with colon cancer. The Blackhawks just released a statement.
Wow.
Oh, boy. Well, we wish Eddie the best.
Certainly do.
Yeah.
One of the great sports heroes this town has ever produced.
Absolutely.
Love it.
My dad had colon cancer, and it was very advanced by the time they caught it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you one thing. He insisted that the children, all of us, get our
get
colonoscopies.
Screened. Yep.
And Katie Couric lost her husband, right?
Right.
To,
very young.
To colon cancer.
My dad too. He was.
Is that right?
So the same thing. My sisters and I all got together and said we're going to start getting them at 35.
Oh,
so
wow.
We started getting colonoscopies at that age, and you know, the sooner you catch it,
yeah,
better it is.
Yeah. I remember I had a couple of polyps removed, and the doctor saying, "You see, if your father had followed, the
regular
examinations,
screening, yeah.
Exactly, it wouldn't have gotten to the point that it did."
Yeah.
But you know, he was very lucky. It was an 8.5-hour operation, never required chemotherapy or anything like that. He
survived that.
Yes, he lived 25 years beyond.
That's excellent news, and that's excellent news for. Obviously, anybody suffering it, and for Eddie, and for friends and family of Eddie, and fans of his.
Yeah,
exactly. It's not. The outcome can be very different than you might expect.
Right.
So we can keep our fingers crossed on this.
Absolutely. Well, he's a very strong-willed guy too.
Yes,
and very disciplined. He's not a, he's not a smoker, not a drinker, not a guy that's he's a very he's very very healthy in great shape. You know, so if there's anybody who can fight this, it is Eddie Olchek.
The Alzheimer's thing, that has got to be absolute torture for everybody around at Alzheimer's. My mother was diagnosed with early Alzheimer's, and for the longest time, she and I talked about everything all the time, and she was very lucid with me. It was only in the later years that we noticed that, that's a terrible thing to watch happen to people.
Yeah. And I can only imagine for the family of Glenn Campbell, going back to this rather depressing little segment we're doing here. But Glenn Campbell, I think if people want to remember this. He just announced he died today at the age of 81. It was announced that he died at the age of 81. His fingerprint on American music.
This is
the thing, and that's if you did Kevin and Violetta, they're always my touchstone for this when they go, who? What?
Who? Right.
Where?
And I think they wrote about this.
And the thing is, and even we'll mention acts that he was associated with and songs, and they'll still go, what?
Yeah.
Who?
Yeah.
Where?
Yeah.
But so much of modern pop music was influenced by the guitar, specifically the guitar work of Glenn Campbell, because he was not, a typical kind of country guitar guy. He did this lush, jazzy guitar thing, which made him, useful. He sat in as a studio musician with
the greats.
Acts that you could not even possibly imagine that he was involved with, and often uncredited. And he was featured with the Beach Boys. People knew about that. That was sort of the beginning of his career, and he had a solo career in the aftermath of that. And Pet Sounds, which is the Beach Boys' most experimental album and most critically acclaimed album, he's on 4 or 5 songs on that album. And when he would tour with them, and the Beach Boys used to like to go out. Beach Boys had a few issues. As a live band, because they had many members who forgot to show up for the concerts, so they always had to carry more people with them than they could today.
How does that happen exactly?
Well, I can tell you how it happens, it's a separate
issue.
Sorry,
different story.
They had some lifestyle issues.
Yes.
Yeah, no question about that.
Yes,
but they had it was a very interesting history with Glenn Campbell and them, and he actually didn't even play guitar because they had amazingly prolific. I mean, the musicianship of the Beach Boys was something, and then the production and all that. I mean, they were trippy. If you listen to Pet Sounds, that album, you're like, oh, my God. It's like you put headphones on and you listen to that, and just the production of it, it was basically Sgt. Pepper's for American surf music or American rock.
That's interesting.
And it's totally hippy-dippy, trippy.
It is.
So he was inducted in the Country Music Hall of Fame, but he really wasn't country, right? Is that
no,
what
no,
he
no.
Was
he was totally a country.
So you're saying he was
artists,
just able to cross over into other genres.
Yes.
Right, but he was mostly a country artist. And he had the Glenn Campbell Show.
Good Time Hour. Yeah.
Right, he played, he played cowboys. Primarily his solo work was almost exclusively country and country pop.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It wasn't a whole lot of, it wasn't doing, big guitar rock songs. But he was appearing as a musician on all these other records, And like I said, sometimes you didn't even know it was him, and he was back there doing it.
Right.
How about that?
Amazing.
Yeah, and the versatility.
And he was also such a – he was one of those great triple threat players, TV show, musician, and movie star.
Yeah,
he
True Grit with John Wayne.
He blows John Wayne off the screen in that movie.
Right.
And there's a – I'll never forget. It's like the first time – I was a little kid when I saw it.
Yes.
First time I ever cried in a movie.
Yeah.
You know, well, Bambi.
What was
sad
about
it?
I didn't see that.
I know.
Yeah,
I think I saw it.
It's well, they redid it fairly recently,
right? And that didn't even come close to the original.
No,
it was the Glenn Campbell John Wayne teaming was genius, as it turned out, and everybody was surprised at how well Glenn came off on that, because he had not done any. Am I right about that, Ro?
Well, he'd done television work. And he'd appeared in you know, 1 hour dramas on TV and things like that. He'd never been in on the big screen, full length movie, and have as big a role. I mean, he was the co-star of the movie with John Wayne, and this was, you know, kind of approaching John Wayne's, you know, sort of the beginning of the slope of his career. And so, you know, John Wayne just showed up for these things, and he was a very — that film specifically was a gigantic hit.
Yeah,
and he did the theme song to it,
True Grit,
which was a number one hit.
It's a beautiful song. It really is lovely, and he was very talented, and it was a very moving presentation. Performance, and isn't that something? He used to sing about being a country boy and, you know, being from Tennessee. And then he talked about how he went out to L.A. and everybody had their hands in his pockets, you know, which I always thought that probably was autobiographical, because he pretty well gave you an insight into what it's like being lifted from simple beginnings to mega stardom. And yet, longing for the days back in Tennessee where he sang his songs for free, as he said. You know?
Right, exactly.
He was
right.
One of 12 kids in a farm family. He said he made as much in 1 week in L.A. as he did all year on working the farm.
That really is almost a Horatio Alger type story. You know, from somebody who made good from simple beginnings.
Yeah. And,
boy, what a career.
What a life.
I think that documentary, that was really a gift to humanity, because it gave us all — they spared nothing. They showed you exactly what went on, the fits of anger and all that, as the Alzheimer's progressed and all. It really gave you a sense of what that disease is all about and what the families that are dealing with that are putting up with. It's really something. And his wife, you got to take your hat off to her, because...
Sure.
She was amazing.
Yeah. I want to play a little bit of this True Grit for you.
Yeah.
Because
okay.
this is one of That's those right. things that, this is not from the original record. This is apparently he had, this is a live performance.
Little girl, the sadness will leave your face as soon as you've won your fight to get justice done. Some days, little girl, you'll wonder what life's about, but others have known. Few battles are won alone, so you'll look around to find someone who's kind, someone who is fearless like you.
This is a gigantic radio hit in the early 70s.
It was a perfect way to end that movie, too.
Well, ease a bit.
Very moving.
When you find a man with true grit, one day you will write.
It's probably good we didn't go to that.
We'd be crying now.
Your Barbara Streisand memories are coming back of the tears flowing down the cheeks. Did you listen to
I know.
Music?
I'll tell you.
Brings back memories.
One.
You go to the, and that, you know, that's kind of a bit of a sort of stuck in time sort of sound and arrangement and everything from that era.
Yeah.
But when you listen just to the lushness again of his voice and his guitar and all that, it's just it takes you to a different place.
It does.
It was a crossover artist. I mean, he had a goofy, almost hee-haw-esque talk show or a variety show
right
on TV. think it was on CBS.
It was.
And yeah. he and it was a it was must see television.
Mm-hmm. And you know,
even in cities.
They kind of made fun of him. I remember that row.
They
kind of, you know, he was a good old boy and you know, and people kind of made fun of him, and I sensed he kind of hardened up after that, you know, a little bit. But and I thought that was so unfair at the time because he was so talented. And did you sense that, or is that just a
yeah? No, I mean, well, I don't know if he hardened up, but his film career didn't really take off after that.
No,
Burt Reynolds actually, who was also coming on the scene at that time, sort of took it is written had taken roles that were written for after True Grit. A bunch of stuff was written for Glenn Campbell. And Burt Reynolds was ascending so quickly.
Yes.
In that sort of same sort of kind of character, that was the that sort of blocked him from having too much more of a career. But he also wanted to go out. He was a musician. I think he felt most comfortable
playing
on stage. And he had a live career too, which was just huge.
Yeah.
So.
Well, we lost one of the. One of the greats,
right? And and for people who are not familiar with him, I think it's important to remember people who that as they created these building blocks of what you hear today.
Mm-hmm.
That's Glenn Campbell is certainly right there with him.
Yeah, so. He was an American original, no question about that.
Tom, thank you so much for devising whatever this is, this weather that, as I said earlier, is like naked weather. You can walk outside, totally naked, totally comfortable, won't break a sweat, everything will be in its proper place.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like that, it's just
couldn't
the best.
Couldn't be nicer.
It really is.
It's a little cool at night, but it's lovely, and I had, this is great stuff. 80s the rest of the week, so
I'll take that. Hey, listen, it's August.
It's
hello,
right.
People.
Isn't this weird? It hasn't been hot and sticky.
No, we've been very, very lucky.
Yeah, so we're just gonna take it right now. I'm just because we have to enjoy this now.
Yes,
while
we do.
It lasts.
Sure.
I'm gonna try something new. I'm gonna try and enjoy my life.
Enjoy every moment.
Bro, why not?
It's the Zen lifestyle.
You're damn right, Tom.
And it makes you realize. When we see great people pass, mortal we all are,
Great point.
It's not an abstract point that this is, there's a beginning and an end to all this. So, do that.
Thank you, sir.
You
appreciate
better.
It. All right.
Thank you,
Tom Skilling. We'll see you tonight on the news turn at 5 o'clock,
guys.
And God knows when it ends tonight.
Exactly. Right.
Thank you.
See you, Ro.
All right, there he goes,
bye,
Tom Skilling.
Bye, Tom.
Here is Violetta Pattermanic with the WGN Traffic Trouble Spots.
They're the two to trust at 4. Watch Ben Bradley, Lourdes Duarte, Chicago's very own WGN-TV Evening News, weeknights from 4 to 5.
All right, Rokan Show with Hannah DeLonsis right here, 720 WGN. All right, coming up on the program.
Yep.
We'll check in with the Bears hysteria.
Oh, yeah.
Bear hysteria.
Kind of hear what happened in Bear Bonet. Today, is that what we call it? I don't see that trending. I'm like, does anyone say that, or are you just sort
of... Well, no, I think people, they would say it if people were hopeful about it.
Right, okay, because it kind of, get psyched sort of thing. Bear Bonet!
Yeah,
this
is more like Bear... Mm-hmm. Listen, I don't like your attitude! We're gonna win! Or something.
Something. We'll see,
we're gonna play, maybe! Or have a quarterback... What? All right, we'll talk to Kevin about this on the other side. Yes. But first, most importantly, Judy's News 2 minutes away. Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN.
Hey, Kev, I got a question for you.
What's up, Coach Fox?
What time's the game on Friday?
The game Friday. Well, the game Thursday.
I mean,
it's
7 Thursday.
O'clock, 7 o'clock at Soldier Field. So remember, the game's
Thursday. I was going to be there Friday. I think that's better. I got a plan. Because I don't want anybody to get hurt. Because we got enough guys getting hurt.
That's a good point.
I'm going to do is I'm going to show up Friday for the game. And then the team will have already left on Thursday.
So will the team be there Thursday? You just won't be, or nobody?
No, I'm saying the whole team. We're going to go Friday, but then the Broncos. Oh, wait, who are we playing?
Yeah, the Broncos. Your
the
former
Broncos.
Team.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Oh, that'll be embarrassing.
It could be.
Former Northwestern great Trevor Siemian will be the starting quarterback for the Broncos in that game.
Oh,
Go Cats.
Go Cats. There you go. You familiar with Northwestern, Coach Fox, at University in Evanston? Just north of the... No? Okay.
No.
Just figured I'd ask.
No, really.
Okay.
Kev, weren't you in Birmingham?
I heard of Oklahoma, though.
Oklahoma?
Yeah, they got a good football program.
Oklahoma? Yeah, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Great program.
Alabama, I know them.
Real, very yeah. good.
I watch them on Saturday sometimes.
Clemson, you're defending national champ.
Yeah, I remember them, yeah.
How about Ohio State? You know Rokan? He pulls for Ohio
Never
State.
Never heard of him.
No.
I've heard unkind things about him, quite honestly.
Oh, really?
I know the truth.
All right.
I think he deserves every bit of it.
Of course you would.
I do have a question.
Yes.
Because this is going to be one of those moments. We have been told now that we're going to see quite a bit of Mitchell Trubisky, who, by the way, we've been told is on lockdown.
What do you mean lockdown?
He's on lockdown.
He can't talk to people?
He's not allowed to look at the media reporting on him. He's not allowed. I guess he just plays video games or something. I don't know.
He's in like jury selection. He's not allowed to talk to the rest of the world.
Jury sequester, right. He has to sit there and not have any contact with the outside world. He can just read a Daniel Steele novel that's already dog-eared.
I bet that's not what he reads.
Well, he says he doesn't read a single thing, but we've heard that before from professional athletes. And then down the road, they get angry about something somebody said or wrote. And you're like, oh, I thought
like
you were
the president
the
about CNN and the failing right. New York Times, right?
Yeah.
Did you see what he just wrote? I mean,
how could you possibly avoid all the media coverage?
Kind of impossible when it's the Bears.
And I think media has been fair. Everyone's been patient with him. I went down. I had to see Mitchell up close today, so I drove down to Bourbonnais.
Let's talk about that.
And he looks like a rookie. That's certainly not me hitting the panic button, but he does look a little timid in the huddle. He is by far, without question, the most talented quarterback on the roster, and that doesn't mean he's ready to start by any means. He's unpolished, has a lot to work on, but he has the strongest arm, which is very clear, and people have started to talk about this. People talked about it a little bit when he was drafted, his athleticism, and about 75 to 80% of the passing calls that they had him run was a bootleg or him rolling out to the right or rolling out to the left or designed.
Well, they're going to do a lot of that.
Oh,
they
yeah.
did it last year. They did it out of necessity because the offensive line was like a salad spinner. It would, you know, you put the salad in, you put the water
those.
In, and then
shooting out giant defensive linemen.
Yes, all of a sudden, just chunks and chunks of defensive linemen.
Large men ready to kill yeah. quarterbacks.
So getting a guy moving, but I think that's also the way the NFL plays right now, too.
Yeah, and I think what I saw was what I basically expected to see, which was some signs of greatness. He made a couple of really, really good throws, deep throws, 40-yard, 50-yard passes that ended up being touchdowns, but he also threw a couple of interceptions, including the final play of practice.
I like those.
He also,
very used to them.
We've seen those. We have Bears fans who are used to them.
Some bumble a snap as well when they were at his own one-yard line. He didn't fumble it, but he didn't look comfortable. So that's a work in progress because, remember, when he was in college, he was mostly out of the shotgun position, so this is all new for him as well. But in terms of upside and talent, there's
something
no
they might have wanted to think about before they moved
true.
Up one position.
That's true. But from what I saw today, there's no question they're going to be extremely patient with him.
Yeah,
you know. But that's really. All the talk is how are they going to manage this? Where you have Mike Glennon, and we talked about this with Hogue yesterday. He's the veteran, but he hasn't even played in a few years because he's been a backup. So is he really a veteran type? He needs a lot of reps as well. So how do you manage him along with Trubisky and mixing them all together in the preseason? But it sounds like Thursday night, reminder, Coach Fox, it is Thursday night preseason opener.
Not Friday.
All three of them will be getting playing time. And it sounds like Trubisky's going to get quite a bit.
I mean, really? That's exciting to see him.
They've been pretty vague on it, and they haven't exactly completely drawn out their game plan and told the media, but it sounds like Glennon will get the first 2 to 3 series, maybe then Sanchez and Trubisky the rest of the way.
I'm gonna make Trubisky number 3.
Right, he's 3, so he could end up playing the entire second half. To be honest,
that'd be cool. He's saying, "Oh,
but you know what's gonna happen though?
Huh. Right,
it could be cool, but there will be if Kevin is accurate here, and I have no reason to believe he's not.
He's on it.
May not look." As savior-ish as Bears fans would like him to be. They want him to be literally the second coming of Tom Brady. Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, and so, but the pressure will be. He's going to make mistakes, and there's going to be. That's why they should put him on lockdown. He shouldn't think about any of this because it is. This will be his first game at kind of quasi NFL speed.
Right. Well, that's the thing too, though. When you do put a guy out there in the second half, he's your third stringer, but that means he's playing with other third stringers,
right,
as your offensive line. And just even watching reps today, when the third stringers are out there and fourth stringers, it's sloppier. It's messier. Guys are on the ground more. They're tripping over each other. It's not as crisp and as clean. So that makes you worry a little bit. So it's like, do you
mean like drop passes? Like when you throw right to a guy and he puts his
right
hands
on the numbers.
Up and then it goes right through his hands?
There was a play Trubisky threw a dime down the middle, crossing pattern. Receiver catches it, takes two steps. The ball just pops out of his hands. The defensive back caught it out of the air. He starts running. Then he trips, then drops the football. I mean, it was a complete mess. I'm like, that sums up your third and fourth and even fifth stringers right there. You know,
we don't want to see that Thursday.
That's what I'm talking about. There's some of that. You know,
I called that a good play, by the way. I like it.
That was fun. It was fun to watch. So.
We're used to it. Trubisky gave interviews, though, today saying that he is probably going to rent for a while, even though he's got a nice big contract. He's not going to buy a big, fat house at this moment.
But he's not ready to commit to the...
Nope. Well, I don't know about committing. He just said, I don't think a big house is going to be my first purchase. I'm just going to rent, get a small apartment.
Right.
And...
Well, as a Bear, do you really want a place with a lot of stairs?
That's a good point.
I mean, that's
that's a good point.
I mean, there's elevator.
But like a big enough elevator to be like right. Like wheeled out in.
Well,
what, you know,
one of the guys he's been rooming with is tight end Adam Shaheen. Remember, yeah. He's the second rounder, the Division II prospect. Of all the players I saw today, nobody stood out more than Adam Shaheen. He looks like the real deal. The full package. Dude. Needs to work on blocking a little bit. But in terms of overall physical presence and size, I didn't see him drop a single pass today. He looks like an NFL tight end. He
gotta
looks
remember
like, he looks legit.
That the great, I mean, doesn't get any better than Edgar Bradovich in terms of analysis of these things.
Mm-hmm. Right.
At least it doesn't get any more entertaining than that.
Well,
for sure. But he called it before the draft.
Uh-huh.
Before
he
the draft,
he
was like, this
him.
Is the guy people should be looking at in the draft.
Well,
this kid that was completely unheralded because he played at Ashland College or Ashland University in Ohio that no one had ever heard of.
He was taking reps with the first team. He looks like he fits right in. It doesn't look like there's going to be much of a learning curve. Some of the people I've talked to today were just a little bit not worried about it, but it takes time in the NFL, and veterans have said that. That's a tough position in the NFL is tight end. You're asked to go be a playmaker and catch balls down the field, and then
and
the next play, block an outside linebacker, you know, who's huge, 6'4", 250, and can run downhill. So it's a tough job. I think blocking will be his biggest hurdle, but in terms of pass catching and playmaking ability, they were doing Hail Mary drills where they just all run down, you know, 50 yards and the quarterback
really
chucks it. And he was catching them. He caught a couple of them. And I mean, he's tall. He's a, you know, head and shoulders above everybody else. So I think he's a player to watch. I think he's going to be here for a while.
Kev, I got a quick question.
Yes.
What's the tall guy who's playing quarterback?
That's Mike Glennon, who's probably your second tallest guy behind Adam Shaheen.
Oh, Shaheen's taller than Glennon.
Shaheen's 6'7", maybe, but he moves well. I know I may sound like I'm overacting a little bit, but he stood out as a rookie to stand out like that among veterans and things.
Okay,
that was impressive.
How did he do today? I didn't watch.
Well, Glennon,
I closed my eyes real tight.
I thought Glennon looked good, except for that one overthrow of Zach Miller that resulted in an interception. But he seems to have a pretty good command of the huddle, and he's confident.
He's the guy. He's standing there acting like he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, kind of. Well, okay. He's doing a good job. If he is acting, he's doing a really good job of showing it off. He looked okay. I mean, him and Mark Sanchez looked about exactly what you would expect.
Well, Mark Sanchez, even though, you know, he's had kind of a, an up and down career.
Yeah.
He did have some up in his career. And I mean, he's been in some tight situations and he's played. He was a starting quarterback for a number of teams in major, you know, cities.
I want to say he's the last starting quarterback for the Jets in a playoff game, if I'm not mistaken.
You're
the
right.
Last time they went to the playoffs,
was
against the Patriots, and he started that game, and that was a close game. So he's got some experience there, then kind of fell out of favor in New York. But I think Sanchez is, you know, a perfect backup for them right now. between him and Glennon. Glennon would make for a good backup, too, if you had a legitimate NFL quarterback. But, you know, for now, I think...
Hey, Mitch Trubisky, don't listen to this conversation. We're not making you the starter right now.
He's on lockdown. He's not listening to the media. Like, sounds like, is that self-imposed, do we know, or is that the team is kind of
I'm sure they sat him down
it,
and showed him the list of 21 quarterbacks that have been here before him. And the sort of, this is the sort of scrutiny you're going to get if you become just another... number on this list of quarterbacks who have flaked out here in Chicago.
We, as a city, we are tough on quarterbacks, aren't we?
Well, it's understandable.
Been disappointed.
Yeah.
All right, wait a second. What's the guy's name again?
Which one? Mitch Trubisky? Or Adam Shaheen? Or Mike Glennon? Who else did we talk
Sanchez?
About? Yeah, I know Sanchez. Okay. I saw him play. I don't know the rest of these guys.
I hope so.
That's one of those things that Ditka used to have to, they used to put the names on tape on the helmets for Ditka because he had no idea who anybody was. Even on his Super Bowl team, even when, you know, like after the Super Bowl game, he was still calling by their numbers.
Oh my gosh.
Hey, nine. Oh, he knew. That's the one guy he did know.
Hey, you. Nine. Hey, yeah. You over
yeah.
here.
Yeah.
One other player real quick to keep an eye on who's going to be a fun, like, fan favorite. He already is turning into a fan favorite.
Very fast, too.
Two great catches today. Tanner Gentry, the receiver.
Great
He's the,
name.
The little white receiver that could.
Tanner, that's so sweet.
He's from Wyoming. There's always one of them a year, and he's the guy this year.
So he's the guy. Well, maybe we can make him a slot
or like
receiver.
Braverman last year.
Yeah. Oh, he's isn't that cute? How was the human joystick? Did you see him?
He was a human joystick, and he made a defensive back look like an absolute fool when he juked him out of his shoes and scored a touchdown.
Oh,
sounds good.
I like that.
Yes, All he right. was fun to watch. Tariq Cohen.
All right.
All right, Coach Fox.
Thank you.
You got it.
Thanks, everybody.
I think
good
being. Feeling better.
All right. Right now, Illinois Department of Transportation has Violetta Pitomatic's WGN Traffic Trouble Spots. Very special top five coming your way on the Rocon Show with Anna DeVlantis. Also in the 6 o'clock hour, Howard Kramer is going to join us. He was the curator of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland, and he'll talk a little bit with us about Glenn Campbell, who it was announced has passed away at the age of 81. All of that coming your way on the program. But first, it's the Rocon Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN.
And look, it's a special time of day, Ro.
It is.
And we look forward to
a lot to get to, so we get right to it.
It's the top five at five on the Rocon Show with Anna DeVlantis. Brought to you by Builder Supply Outlet. True outlet prices every day. Now home of the Edge Kitchen and Bath Showroom.
It's the top five on the Rocon Show. Let's go.
Number five.
This afternoon, the president delivered some shocking remarks.
Chilling.
In his response to the North Korean nuclear threat, it was announced by sources, spoke to Fox News and then to the Washington Post, unnamed sources, and said that the Defense Intelligence Agency now assesses that North Korea is capable of placing a nuclear warhead on top of an intercontinental ballistic missile. So the president says this.
North Korea best not make any more threats to the United States. They will be met with fire and fury like the world has never seen. He has been very threatening beyond a normal statement. And as I said, they will be met with fire, fury, and frankly, power, the likes of which this world has never seen before.
Now,
boy,
you know, that's one thing if it's just you and some other guy who are going to go out to the bike racks at 3:30.
Mm-hmm. But you think about the great suffering.
But you think about, well, you think about that, but you also just think about the politics of this, the geopolitics of this. Mm-hmm. You've got within, as far as we are from downtown to Aurora, is essentially the distance between Pyongyang and Seoul, the two capitals of North and South Korea. A little bit further than that, but not much. And the point here is that you have Seoul is within striking distance easily of a conventional threat, a firestorm and fury. Japan is.
Well, they've proven that.
And there is a this kind of, you know, talk softly and carry a big stick is not that's not what the president's doing. It's just it's a shock. I think it's a shock to our allies. It's a shock to a lot of people who are like, whoa, whoa, whoa. The United States is not supposed to threaten a nuclear or even conventional, you know, firestorms. We already have that capability. The guys who have the capability don't talk about it. They know that we have that capability. In terms of responding to this, the issue is to create a rhetorical circumstance that it's like having your mouth write a check that your body can't cash.
Oh, absolutely. No one wants to see this one cashed. You know, the president was saying that the message to the regime was it's best not to make any more threats against the United States because of the way North Korea responded after the sanctions from the UN Security Council. We will take action. We will come after you. You know, it was a very aggressive statement. And so that's the president's message. But of course,
this can escalate things, right?
That's where it can go.
You don't want to walk yourself into, you know, the same way that Saddam Hussein walked. And listen, North Korea is not going to come out of this well. The United States will win in an exchange, whatever kind of an exchange. I mean, if they have a thermonuclear exchange with us, it's not going to be good. But there are not a lot of experts to say that they're prepared for that. But whatever happens, they're going to take out Seoul in the meantime. Tens of millions of people. And a gigantic economic driver. It will send the world into an economic tailspin, at least in the short term.
Not to mention the human suffering.
Right. I mean, just that. Let's just look at it from the way I'm trying to look at it, the way the president looks at it. Here's the way that Kellyanne Conway looked at it.
Can you explain specifically what he meant by fire and fury? Is that military action?
No, I can't. I think the president's comments were very strong and obvious. I know all of you covered them live. And I would defer to other members of Dr. Price's cabinet to comment further.
I think it was probably wise to not try to recharacterize that, because what do you say? It's already out there.
Yeah. You don't need an interpretation of that.
No.
But it's it's one of those situations where he also established a red line without saying red line. And then the question, you know, becomes this. I don't think that Kim Jong-un is not going to respond rhetorically. And then what does the president do? Would the wise thing to do, quite honestly, and I think the reality here is we do whatever we're going to do here behind the scenes. There will be some sort of diplomatic entreaty now, especially that the Russians and Chinese have signed on and the sanctions against North Korea. The pressure is on them. But you don't want an exchange. You just don't want a firestorm on the Korean Peninsula, no matter what.
No.
And if you can keep that from happening, and I know that this is it appeals to the tough guy nature of you know the president's rhetorical flourish, and mm-hmm. it maybe it appeals politically in the United States to his supporters. But I just think the world. And the markets reacted immediately to it.
Yep, there was a drop.
And I think that that's one of the things that you have to think about. You got the economy going well right now. You've got things domestically. So, you know, again, we could remind him of all the great things he reminds us about that he's done. Mm-hmm. And we knew this was going to be tough. Everybody knew this was going to be tough. But you don't want to make it worse, and you don't have to. There is no political advantage to the president right now in this whatsoever. So you just let your diplomats and let your military people go top to top with the North Koreans and the South Koreans and the Chinese and the Russians and try to walk this guy away from literally getting threatened into something. Because the United States president should not be the madman that people fear on the planet Earth. We should be a beacon of hope, not a creator of fear. All right. Checking in at, but that's easy for me to say. But I'm not president yet.
Number 4. 'Cause the players gonna play, 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 play. And the haters gonna
hate, 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 baby. I'm just gonna shake, 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 shake. Apparently she can't shake it off.
I don't blame her. I'm Team Swift on this one.
She's continued in a court battle with a DJ. She accused the DJ of groping her during a photo shoot, and now the DJ has countersued Swift, saying that's not what he did, and he got fired for it because it became such a firestorm, speaking thereof.
Different context.
Much different context. And a group of fans were lined up outside the courthouse. These would be Swifties?
Is that what they call them?
Yes,
kids?
That's correct.
Swifties. Tay-Tay heads?
I've never heard that.
Tay-Tay.
They were hoping to get into the public access area of the courtroom, but, well, it's a little jammed.
She's here standing up for herself. She is not backing down, which is a really, really good message for all of her fans, especially young ones, maybe people growing up, going through coming of age, or have had something like this happen to them. For someone with her platform, I can see how it would be even more difficult for her to come out with this story. And I just think that it's so amazing that she did, and she's here standing up for herself. She is not backing down. It makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah,
you can tell Taylor, just, she's like this with the girl and like this yeah. with the guy, and his hand is firmly on her butt.
There you go. She said she's never been more sure of anything in her life that he groped her.
Yeah, you know, when you're taking a picture after the interview, you know, sometimes your hand just gets a little loose, that's all.
Under her skirt and low, that was the other problem.
Well, I had to go low to go high.
Yep. Not buying it. She's countersuing for $1, saying you can say no, women. Telling women you could say no.
Oh, he just owes her $1?
That's the counters. I guess that's the suit.
She's showing it's not about the money.
$1. He wants $150,000 for lost wages.
That's 10 years of wages that I just lost.
Yeah. If creepy were a crime, this guy, class 3 felony. I mean, whoa. But I'm sure it'll all be worked out in court.
Yeah. Right after this.
All right. Speaking of that, here is Violetta Paramedic with the WGN Traffic Trouble Spots.
Play ball. Celebrate the Cubs with team memorabilia, exclusive books, so much more. All you have to do, visit ChicagoTribuneStore.com. Check it out today.
Top 5 of 5 continues, checking in at
number 3.
Jay Cutler had his first practice today as a Miami Dolphin.
Mm-hmm.
Head coach Adam Gase says that Cutler got right back into the swing of things.
He just was trying to figure out who does what, and, you know, he just jumped right back in. It seemed like he'd been here for a minute.
Yeah, he tried to figure out what's what. Now which color uniforms are we?
A headline in the sports section of the Miami Herald.
Yeah.
Jay Cutler, a star in first practice with Miami Dolphins.
Boy, he's going to be loving that treatment. He didn't see a lot of that love here.
Oh, I got to tell you, but when he was on his way here, the anticipation of Jay Cutler being a Chicago Bear.
It's just been so long ago.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? He might have an astounding end of his career there. I do not put it past him.
I don't believe it when I see it.
Still wish he was in the broadcast booth this
year. I know, that would be so much more entertaining, wouldn't it?
Cutler says he still has to work out some issues.
It felt right. I mean, going into work and getting here and, you know, going through the motions of the practice. I mean, it felt good. Getting my feet underneath me, just the timing of the game, rhythm. I mean, that stuff is just going to take a little bit of time.
Sounds very excited to be there throughout the entire presser. Yeah,
maybe it's going to go fine. Maybe the white helmets will help him for the Miami Dolphins with the green dolphin on the side of it. Maybe that'll help him. Oh, those are my guys. Okay. Maybe he's colorblind. Maybe he doesn't like blue. I don't know.
That's a good point.
Who knows? We'll see.
Did he smile at any point during that news conference, Kevin Powell? Did we see a smile?
Just about a Jay Cutler smile. Okay. Just what you'd expect from Jay Cutler.
Side smile? More of a smirk than a smile?
Right. Yeah. All right.
Well, we look forward. You know what? It's must-watch television for me on Sundays now to see how he plays in Miami.
Mm-hmm. I'll be watching.
If I'm Channel 2, I'm putting that on every week.
Yeah,
because they have a choice. I mean, they could do that.
Do?
Yeah. They could put on if they've got an early game for the AFC. They can do.
Right. They have all the flex scheduling now.
Yep.
Where networks can choose and pick and slide away games they know are going to be clunkers.
Yep. And this, even if it's a clunker, it's a must-see for Chicago Bears fans. Like, oh, my God, especially if the Bears lose on a day and then Jay Cutler wins. Oh, come on!
Number 2.
Yes. Rachel Lindsay's journey to find love is complete. after a summer on The Bachelorette.
Thank God.
Taking the back burner to all the Bachelor in Paradise drama. Mm-hmm. The Texas attorney finally got her moment to go public with her brand new love of her life. She did have to make out with 30 different guys to get there. That is a lot of spit being swapped.
Oh, gosh.
And God
knows. I
think
she kissed all of them. The Waboom guy, I bet he didn't get a kiss. That Waboom guy? No way.
They got a kiss on the cheek. I watched that episode.
All right.
And then she did have to go to the fantasy suite with a few guys. But, you know, it's worth it if you find true love.
That's what she wanted.
And she
wants an engagement. She wants a proposal.
Brian Abasolo was the big winner. Beat out Eric Bigger and Peter Krause. I don't know. Guy's name was Bigger.
Mm-hmm. Live up to that.
That's all I'm saying. Last night's finale of the ABC series revealed that Rachel is finally in love. And now here are Brian and Rachel discussing their future plans.
Oh, good. This will be good.
We just want to bring our lives together. We really haven't thought about, well, we thought about it, where we're going to live, but...
Miami, Dallas,
we have three cities,
between.
You know, maybe L.A., maybe Dallas, okay. Maybe Miami. We're still trying to figure that out.
Okay.
Yeah. We just want to bring our lives together,
right.
Wherever that may be.
Have you guys talked wedding yet, where that leads?
Not details, but a time of season, you know. She wants to do a winter wedding. And whatever she wants, she gets. So.
I mean, I'm from Texas, obviously. I want a winter wedding.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. First of all, I wouldn't let her do a real estate closing.
Why?
Especially a real estate closing.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm very certain.
She's talking about it's an emotional time.
I don't want
She's
her
not engaged.
I don't want her in traffic court with me. But
she did cry her false eyelashes off.
Yeah. And I like
very
how
emotional.
They have three options to choose from. You've got Dallas where she lives and she's a lawyer. Mm-hmm. You got Miami where he's from. And then L.A., of course, because now they're big stars.
Oh, that's true. You got to deal with that.
So you have to deal
probably
with living
where their agents are.
Yes. And you must live in Los Angeles because that's where all the work is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Not.
What do you mean?
Who can you name a current or past, I should say, past bachelor or bachelorette who got together who are working in entertainment? Now, I'm not talking about being on the covers of magazines. I'm talking about actually drawing a paycheck in entertainment.
Trista Sutter, the first one, and Ryan, they were on it for a long time. They did a lot of stuff.
They were...
I don't even know who that is.
She was the very first.
They're
yes,
married.
And they still are. He was the firefighter.
Which
and
is the point.
They live in Colorado, and he's a firefighter.
It's great,
but they're not working in entertainment.
No, they did for years. They did. They had different gigs. I can't remember all of them.
That was like the second season, right? That was the first Bachelorette season.
Yeah, that's right. They're right. She was the runner up in The Bachelor, and she became The Bachelorette.
So, can you tell me of
single show?
No,
I mean,
you cannot.
Don't they for a year?
You cannot.
They get gigs. I mean, they go out on like a publicity tour for like a year or something.
No, I think they get the cover of People and then that's it.
And I think they also, there's some shopping mall openings that they can go to.
I think they continue to pay them for a while, don't they? In order for them to go out and keep sharing their life and promoting upcoming seasons. And
they pay
like that.
Them for their true love?
After this, don't they?
You know that makes you. Yeah, well, I think they pay them for appearances and things like that. But they get paid for appearances. So she will be going to an Ulta 3 opening by next week. She's going to get the standard $1,500. Hey, it's worth it for 2 hours sitting around in Ulta.
It's not bad work.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you can get it.
But you can do that anywhere, not L.A.
Number one.
And finally, Glenn Campbell, the indelible voice behind 21 top 40 hits, including...
Like a rhinestone.
And probably one of the sweetest songs of his.
I can hear you through the wine and the Wichita line.
And my personal favorite of his songs, By the Time I Get to Phoenix.
By the time I get to Phoenix, she'll be rising.
It was a sound. It was a specific kind of a sound.
No,
the kids are looking at me like, what are you doing? Glenn Campbell has died. He had a career that spanned six decades. sold over 45 million records. In 1968, he outsold the Beatles.
That's an incredible thing. Now think about that in 1968.
And you know what came out from the Beatles in 1968?
Oh, that was a big year for them.
Gigantic year for them. And he was still outselling them. He kind of sprung to fame in late of 1964. Brian Wilson from the Beach Boys had a nervous breakdown and had to leave the tour. So they called on Glenn Campbell to play bass and all the high harmonies.
Where did your long hair go?
In 2011, Campbell, who was 75, revealed that he was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. June of that year, he announced he was retiring from music due to the disease. He released his final album of original music called Ghost on the Canvas. And that, by the way, that album featured Billy Corgan. Have you kids heard of him?
Oh, Smashing yeah. Pumpkins?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Paul Westerberg and Jacob Dylan. Heard of him? Mm-hmm. Wallflowers?
Yeah.
Maybe. He had a dad. Bob his Dylan's. Dad did something too, yeah. Bob. And then he embarked on a farewell tour with three of his kids backing him.
The sun doesn't have to shine. It doesn't matter what I do. There's no me without you.
This is, he recorded that in the throes of Alzheimer's.
Wow.
Think about that.
There's no me.
Glenn Campbell was 81.
The top five at five.
It's the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. Now, you know what they're doing here, here in Chicago. It's the anniversary of the Picasso.
And 50th anniversary.
They're doing the celebration today. As it turns out, the actual anniversary is next week.
I know, I heard about this.
The 15th. But the city, before they realized it was the 50th anniversary of the Picasso, they booked the Indian
consulate.
It's like an Indian. It's like the Indian takeover day of the plaza.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, a little celebration of India. I guess they'll have like food and other things out there.
Yeah. And that's going to be right around the Picasso statue. So they couldn't actually do it on the anniversary of the anniversary
Honest
of the unveiling.
Honest mistake.
If you got one chance to have a 50th anniversary, one day. You figure if you were going to do it, you'd figure it out.
You sound like an upset wife.
So how do they screw this up?
Because they can. Because they're the city of Chicago. Have you seen what else goes on around here?
That's a good point.
Those bookings probably happen a long time in advance.
Maybe in advance of the 50th anniversary?
They're not thinking about it until it gets closed.
In 1967, they knew when the 50th anniversary was going to be.
I'm not making excuses for it, but I bet that thing was booked, and then they realized, oh, no, we can't kick the Indian Consul General out. But they've already got their whole
thing
planned.
That's going to look bad.
Bad luck.
Well, they can't move him to, like, Millennial Park or something? Millennium Park?
Why do they have to move?
Because the Picasso's point. There.
Isn't
That's
there,
why.
Isn't there enough space for everyone?
No. They had to do. There was a whole thing today where they're, you know, showing it off, and and people are walking around still staring at it 50 years later, going, "What the hell is that thing? It's big."
I love it. I used to slide down it. Actually, I probably still would slide down it. I just haven't in a while.
It was not warmly embraced when it was first unveiled.
And well, because it looked rusty from the very beginning.
Yeah, and people didn't get it. It was avant-garde.
Is it supposed to be that ugly?
Where have you slid down it? Where do you slide down?
The base?
Yeah, the base is on a diagonal. It's like a slide. All the kids do it.
Mm-hmm. All the kids
that.
Do it, yeah.
But sometimes there's also birds over there, so you have to be careful.
Mm-hmm.
There's a dirty little secret about it. And apparently, the woman who was at the unveiling today, who wrote a book about it, a professor, I believe, and about the entire history and tracked the whole thing of Picasso and how they lured his art to the city and that kind of thing. If you stand at a certain height on a certain floor of that building...
Mm-hmm.
You look down, it can get dirty.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how dirty? What are we talking here?
Mm-hmm.
Let Dad explain it to you.
Kids.
You know about this?
Yeah. if you get up on a floor, which ironically is the
69th,
is the family court floor of the Daily Center.
Gets worse that you have a certain angle of the Picasso.
And what does it look like?
What does it look like? A Jerry?
No.
Something sticking out?
No.
Nope.
No.
The opposite of a Jerry?
All right.
It's like two legs.
This is in this book you're talking about here by Patricia Bolton Stratton,
mm-hmm.
who
very smart.
Who's going to be joining us on Friday, by the way, to talk about this
on the real anniversary.
No, not the real, but it's close
we'll
enough.
Celebrate the real one.
Yeah. Jacques Brunson told me in the 1960s that there was a dirty joke embedded in the sculpture, but you have to see it from the right angle. All the architects were concerned about Picasso's sense of humor. Some of his later drawings and paintings were becoming more sensual.
Right. They were explicit, some of them.
Nudes.
Yeah.
So they were all concerned that he was going to do something filthy with this
and maybe
statue.
He didn't disappoint. I don't know. Depends on your point of view.
So this guy said that from a certain floor in the Daily Center, you could look down and see what was really there. I went up, I was doing a Channel 11 documentary, and saw exactly what he said was true.
Oh, gosh. But I suppose after they tell it to you, that you see it.
The wings are really a woman's hips bending over, and the open space seen from the rear is actually a woman's...
Sup.
Well, and now it looks like the slide that I normally slide down.
Mm-hmm.
Are those the legs?
No, that's just the base of the statue. You have to go all the way up to the top.
Well,
and then start there.
I know those
down.
Are the base, but
nope,
I'm saying
that has nothing to do with the legs.
Yeah,
it's the sides of the statue.
Yeah, you got to be in the Daily Center again. You just went through divorce court.
You're going to make family court really popular. Yeah. It's going to be like crowded the next couple of days.
And then you look down, and what you see is basic because you would. It's a large, you know. It's like because when you see it, it's sort of like, oh boy, I'm seeing all the way to Broadway there.
This sounds like a show outing. Let's
go
find the floor.
It might be. Check it out. See for yourself. You know, size it up if you want to. And
yeah.
I mean, I guess we would see it and just sort of leave, but it would be worth it.
Yeah.
I'm down.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically, this is like going to Lollapalooza, basically. Same deal.
Rose still shouting at the Picasso.
Put some clothes on!
Really? That's obscene.
So you're going to have to get out of family court.
I would go into family court. Judge, come out here for a second. Do you see this one? Do you see what I'm seeing, Judge?
We need a ruling over here to see if
this is... ruling. Is this obscene? You're a judge. You'll know when you see it. Come on. Go to the window. Look down there. See? That looks like a gigantic...
All the dads are following you.
Let me take a look at this, too.
I got it.
Everyone needs to inspect it.
Honey, hold on one second. We'll get divorced in 5 minutes. I got to go out and take a look at this.
I need to investigate.
Which is exactly why I got divorced in the first place.
Oh, gosh. Probably true.
Oh,
but
God.
You think about it, you know. And then wasn't Picasso ambiguous about, there was no naming of the statue or anything like that.
Right.
So it's sort of left up to interpretation.
Well, because the name of the statue would have been. Yeah. Because that's what it really is. You know, people have been wondering for years and years and years about this. Like, what is it? Is it a dinosaur? Is it a bird? Is it a human? Is it a
baboon.
Lady? Is it a baboon? It looks mostly like a baboon, right? But... it turns out, I think they call it the woman or the lady or something. The woman, right?
I don't think there was an official title to it. I thought he intentionally left it ambiguous for people to bring their own interpretation to it.
Well, there's a silhouette of a man's face on another angle, right? Like, can you look at it from like 50 different angles and see something different?
Well, it's clearly a woman.
That particular angle.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's clearly a woman.
Or... from this angle, it is.
The picture I've seen, it's like the face of a man. I think it is.
Yeah. It just, but I mean, if you get, again, you got to get up to like the 17th floor or whatever it is, and you're like, woo! right
different
down that
perspective.
Thing. Yeah.
It's totally a different perspective.
And you look at the front of it and you're like, oh, I don't know what the hell that is. And you go up to 17 and you go, oh my
you're
God.
Like, whoa, how come I never saw that before?
Oh my God.
I you think you've seen the Chicago Picasso before. Yeah.
I got to see this.
Yeah, you got to see
it. It explains everything, essentially.
Well, I'm kind of offended. Everyone says it's so ugly. Huh.
Well, from that angle.
From that angle, it's a different story.
It really depends on the angle that you're approaching it. So that's the thing. I mean, it's ugly from one angle and then really beautiful from others.
I have to take a walk tomorrow afternoon.
To get up on 17 and you look down on it, you know, it's a different sort of, it's, you know, it's the essence of humanity right there.
Yeah, I think, yeah, you've got the kids interested in art all of a sudden.
Yeah,
so
this is how I
very interested.
The Picasso.
Cultural outings.
Yeah.
I'm a big art guy.
Yeah.
After that, we can go over to the Museum of Modern Art and, you know,
a lot of
Art Institute.
Sculptures there.
Well, but that's what Picasso was doing later in his career. He was doing all kinds of, like, deck pics, as Kevin likes to call them.
A lot of nudes.
Those were actual... Explicit. Pictures of decks.
Of your deck.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Beautiful deck.
And you thought it was like a bowl of fruit. It turns out it was like, you know, that's not a fruit.
That's how they get you.
Yeah. Is a peach supposed to look like that? You kids, you all use it now on the emojis, but I'm telling you, Picasso was the guy who invented that concept.
Clever man.
Yeah, very clever.
Remember Royko? I reread Royko's column about it, and I remember that, you know, how it was just, there was a scathing reviews, like, it seemed like universal in the city when it was unveiled, and he called it a big, homely metal thing. And if it's a woman, it's one of the more, you know, kind of homely-looking women he's ever seen.
That's what they said, the woman. And he, but apparently he didn't go up onto 17 in the Daily Center and look down on it, and then he would have said, oh,
it's beautiful.
I get it now.
No, I love it. He loves it.
Best statue I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah. Telling you, you know, I mean, that's like $20 at a strip club to see what you see from the 17th floor there. That's what's happening.
Oh, gosh. I mean,
$10 if you go on a Thursday night between 7 and 10.
Does it come with an all-you-can-eat buffet?
Yes, it comes with a Chinese buffet, too, by the way.
Dollar beers.
Oh, gosh.
Pretty good food, though, sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes.
I say for the 50s.
Just don't go for the seafood.
No, no, bad idea.
Stay away from the oysters.
Feel out of Potter Max got the WGN traffic trouble spots. All right, it's Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis.
Just told a dirty art story here.
Well, it's a moment of fact and truth.
Absolute
cultural growth.
Right, a piece of the city's cultural history.
The Picasso statue, which does not turn 50 today. It turns 50 next week, but the city double booked the date.
With the Indian consulate.
With the Indian consulate.
And they couldn't bring those together. They were trying to figure that out. And it just didn't work. Didn't work.
So they did the 50th anniversary of it today. As it turns out, if you go up onto a certain floor of the Daily Center and you look down upon the statue, it turns into a piece of pornography.
Wasn't it also known as the cultural rebirth of Chicago?
That's what it is.
Which
that's
gives
exactly
it a whole
right.
New.
North Korea best not make any more threats to the United States. They will be met with fire and fury like the world has never seen. He has been very threatening beyond a normal statement. And as I said, they will be met with fire, fury, and frankly, power, the likes of which this world has never seen before. Thank you.
And that was a statement from around 2 o'clock Chicago time by the president responding to the threat by North Korea against the United States. And it took a lot of people back.
It did.
Back because it's generally you don't hear a statement like you never hear an American president threatening another country just on a war of words.
About clearly talking about nuclear weapons. I mean, this is what the battle is with North Korea. The fact that they've been showing off their military might, doing these missile tests, and now the Washington Post report that was all but confirmed by the president that they have even higher capabilities than we thought they had at this point.
So So the president said they best not be threatening. Well, they just did. They just released a statement saying that they are carefully examining a plan to strike the U.S. Pacific territory of Guam with missiles. They do have missiles. They know they can hit that. Mm-hmm. They're not sure about the ICBM. In a statement by the Korean People's Army on the state-run KCNA News, said the strike plan will be put into practice in a multi-current and consecutive way any moment. Don't know what any of that means.
No.
That sounds like this. You know, these are like madman threats where it's like a bunch of words you string together that don't really mean anything.
Hmm.
Now, earlier, you remember how this all happened. Earlier, North Korea said that there would be a severe lesson for the United States because of the sanctions that we pushed through the UN.
Said the U.S. would pay dearly for those sanctions and had very strong words about how they would have to lash out and retaliate.
Washington then warned it was ready to use force if needed, right? You had the president just at 2 o'clock today say what he did. Even though they were, and you had Tillerson out, who was basically saying, listen, he was trying to cool this thing off.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, this is one of the issues you have in the White House where you got, and maybe it's intentional. I don't know. Maybe it's not a problem. Maybe it's exactly the way they want it. We got the president saying one thing, and then you've got his diplomat saying something else. Right? So you had Rex Tillerson, Secretary of State, out there saying, hey, no, you know, we would like to have meetings. You got some other people from think tanks and other military types saying we should have meetings and warning people not to do anything that leads to a mistake, an escalation. Because you have to imagine that North Korea understands that if they were to strike Guam, which is a U.S. territory and the site of a military installation,
mm-hmm.
that there would be immediate retaliation by the United States. Now, nobody really wants that because you've got, upon retaliation by the United States, the potential is very high for North Korea then to retaliate against South Korea. And that's exactly what they've been waiting to do. And this since 2 o'clock this afternoon, has escalated pretty significantly. It's an unsteady moment here.
It is. It's chilling to even hear those words being used, knowing, again, this is talking about a man with nuclear weapons and a regime.
Two guys with nuclear weapons.
Yeah.
Well. And the president, you know, one would not imagine that the United States would use a nuclear weapon here. I mean, it just doesn't seem to, you know, I cannot imagine the United States firing the first shot in a nuclear war unless it were in a bilateral way, right? In an asymmetrical situation where you do have North Korea that does not have the military nor political or economic strength or agenda here. I just can't imagine, based on what the guy is saying, that we would take him out.
And you even heard Nikki Haley, the U.N. ambassador this morning, the U.S. U.N. ambassador, say, you know, you got to think, what's the end game? He's got to know, Kim Jong-un, that any kind of, you know, military might or use of military might would create a reaction. She said, is he really going to come after the U.S. knowing what the U.S. can do back? He's got to make that calculation, is what she's saying.
To publicly have to say that is, even in and of itself, kind of scary.
It is. But, I mean, this is Kim Jong-un had just said that we're going to teach the U.S. a severe lesson. And now we are where we are 24 hours later.
All right. Is this just a bunch of talk or is there really a threat? Bob Baer, formerly the CIA, is going to join us on the other side of Violetta Potomatic with the WGN Traffic Trouble Spots.
So there's this. They are the two to trust at 4 o'clock. Watch Ben Bradley, Lourdes Duarte, Chicago's very own WGN-TV Evening News, weeknights from 4 to 5.
That's the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. All right, the war of words continues. A couple of hours ago, we told you that the president issued a very, very, very stern warning against the North Koreans. Let's play that again. This was what he said during an opioid event in New Jersey earlier today.
North Korea.
best not make any more threats to the United States. They will be met with fire and fury like the world has never seen. He has been very threatening, beyond a normal statement. And as I said, they will be met with fire, fury, and frankly, power, the likes of which this world has never seen before.
Well, North Korea just threatened again, saying that they are carefully examining a strike, an imminent strike, on the island of Guam, U.S. territory of Guam.
Chilling.
Bob Baer joins us, formerly of the CIA, one of the most decorated, publicly acknowledged decorated CIA officers of all time. And Bob, you know, it's the you just know that the president is not going to be able to rhetorically outflourish one of the craziest world leaders in human history.
Well, you know, here's the problem is these guys are isolated, needless to say. They don't understand the world, and they could very well take this as a declaration of war. And in the way they approach a conflict, they might decide they have to make a preemptive strike on Guam or Anchorage or any number of places. And what sort of damage could they do to, you know, in a strike like this? I don't know, and no one knows, because our intelligence is so bad on North Korea. I mean, they may have a miniaturized nuclear warhead right now as we speak that could put on an ICBM and have a re-entry shield that could get through. This is very doable for them. This is serious, what I'm trying to say here.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I don't think there's any question about that. And I, when you hear an American president threatening we're assuming nuclear, but a firestorm, essentially, over an adversary. Yeah, I can't really remember a time where an American president made a threat like that where we weren't in an active shooting war.
Never. It's never happened. And especially with North Korea, when presidents have been advised, when it actually was the State Department advising the president, don't escalate. North Korea, you know, if we can contain them, we'll be doing fine. We get the help of the Russians and the Chinese. It'll never be perfect. They'll never be, go along with the rules. But do not escalate them in rhetoric into a war, because they easily could move on Seoul tonight or hit Guam or do both. And we could not take out their ICBMs. With an initial strike, they'd be able to come back from that and hit various targets.
The question I think that's being raised in Washington, Nikki Haley alluded to it today, and I think a lot of experts are saying, well, he's not suicidal. He likes his scotch. He likes his lifestyle. He likes the living in the palaces and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And he knows that he wouldn't be able to do that anymore if he were to strike the United States. So this is just a game of brinksmanship to him. Is that?
Well, we don't know that. We can only take a look at their actions in the past. You know, and you talk. You know, I was talking about this on TV about hitting the USS Pueblo. It was an act of war. We decided not to respond and got our boat back. And there was an incident. We were cutting trees, our soldiers, and they came across and hacked them up, which is another act of war. So to say that these people are just bluster is a mistake, and we simply don't know what goes through this man's head, Kim Jong-un. We just don't know.
Bob, should we believe there are conversations going on with some sort of leadership within North Korea at this time? Is there something being done diplomatically at this hour, or is it just war between words between two leaders?
Well, there are back channels, you know, with through the Chinese and even the Russians, that we can send messages back and forth and say, let's talk ourselves down from this. But the question is, will the North Koreans listen? The U.S. military does not want to go into a conflict with North Korea. I can tell you that. It's scary.
Yeah. I mean, you certainly don't want to be in a ground war there. Let's talk a little bit about possible outcomes here. Even if there were a conventional strike on Seoul by the North Koreans, they're close enough and they have enough firepower aimed at Seoul, we are told, that just using conventional rockets, that it would be very, very hard to defeat all of them. You defeat some of them, but we've been trying to send anti-missile technology to the Koreans in advance of this, but it to the South Koreans. If they took out Seoul, it would require basically a UN response. It would require an allied response on behalf of us, because we still occupy the DMZ in South Korea, and we have a lot of active military in South Korea. The United States does. So you would imagine that we would be drawn in, and a ground war there. I mean, when you stop and you think about the Korean conflict, right, the Korean War, I mean, the North Koreans fought that war to a deadlock, right? That they did not lose that war. The South Koreans didn't lose it either, but to a deadlock. And that's where we sit on the 38th parallel on that line. Mm-hmm. And that's where the people are standing across from each other wanting to kill each other. Now the question really becomes this. Would we be willing to go back into a ground war there in very hilly terrain, really tough to fight on the ground? This is not like open desert like you see in Afghanistan, in Iraq. It's much, much more similar to Afghanistan, except it's not quite as hot and it's not quite as lush. Or it is lush. It is more lush.
It would look like World War III, no question about it. I mean, there's nothing these THAAD missiles can do to stop a North Korean strike, stop some missiles. But the North Koreans have caught on to swarming. That's just setting multiple. They could flatten Seoul very quickly. They could call their troops up and go in full alert and have them on the move before we really got sign of it. So they could come across the 38th parallel fairly quickly. Prisoners were – there is no good scenario in a war like this. This is not like going into Baghdad in 2003, not in the least.
Well, and you can't underestimate the irony of this either. Understate the irony of this either. The president was so opposed to the invasion of Iraq, and made it a big political thing. And now, we're making big noise and a very similar kind of thing. You had a foreign dictator saying, "Hey, you can't look at I'm not going to tell you if I got chemical or nuclear, and you can't look," and all that. I mean, It was exactly the kind of escalation and provocation that led to an invasion. And if you do strike North Korea with a nuclear weapon, you have the fallout issue, because that's a very small part of the world. It's tiny geographically, that part of the world. There will be the Chinese will be impacted by it. The South Koreans, an important ally and a gigantic economic driver for the world, let alone the United States, will be affected by it, and the Japanese will be affected by it.
Yeah, the Japanese will be sucked in. They'll be hit. They'll be hit with a lot of missiles. So it will look like a world conflict. I mean, we just simply can't predict what what's going to happen here. And we're not talking about we're talking about a country that puts all of its resources into the military. Mm-hmm. And they're very good on their communications and hiding, their armor and their missiles and the rest of it. When we went into Iraq again in 2003, you had an army that had been defeated by the Iranians essentially, and then fought in 1990-91. And Saddam didn't have an army.
Highly degraded.
So there was nothing there. Yeah. But North Korea is something else.
What?
And again, we go back to the intelligence. We just simply do not have the intelligence that we could quickly and easily defeat their military.
Do you think there's any nexus between the fact that the Iranians are being watched in their nuclear program and the acceleration of the nuclear program in North Korea?
Well, I hate to bring everything back to Iraq, but they look at Saddam and said, who didn't have he got attacked because he didn't have a nuclear weapon or rockets or advanced weaponry. And so everybody's saying, well, if that's going to happen to Saddam, if he's going to get attacked for no particular reason other than he was an annoyance to the Bush administration, that's why so many of these countries are rushing toward getting nuclear capabilities.
If you were called into the White House tonight, Bob, I doubt this is going to happen because you're on CNN, but I'm going to ask you anyway. Mm-hmm. If you got called in tonight to advise the president, what would you tell him?
There are a couple people. In fact, some ex-colleagues of mine who know Kim Jong-un, I'd have him on an airplane. and I'd say, hey, let's de-escalate now. Let's open negotiations. But I'd definitely walk this back. I'd have people in the air by now.
Yeah.
Right. I hope they do.
Bob, thank you.
Thanks,
I know,
Bob.
You're in between CNN gigs here, and I appreciate you spending the time with us, as always.
Thanks. Bye.
Thanks, Bob Baer, formerly of the CIA. Mm-hmm. The most decorated, publicly acknowledged decorated CIA agent of all times right there.
A familiar place I've never been before. This is the long walk home. A beautiful feeling like I've never known. This is the long walk home. I know I'll never be the same again. I hope I still remember you.
That's Glenn Campbell, who it was announced today has passed away at the age of 81. And rock and roll editor of the Rocon Show with Anna DeVlantis, Herb Kramer's with us. And we don't just get any rock and roll editor. This man was a curator at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland, Ohio, my friends.
Kind of a big deal.
Kind of a big
Love
deal
hearing
for sure.
From him.
Kind of a big deal in certain circles. Yeah, yeah. I get that. Sometimes.
That's the way I look at it, too. In certain circles. And those circles do not include my family. All right, let's talk about the legacy of Glenn Campbell. Because, you know, we got a couple of millennials on this show, Howard, and they're like, Glenn Campbell died. Who's he? They thought he was a Chicago Blackhawk. This is a different guy.
I thought he was a soup guy.
Yeah, that's what they said, the Campbell soup guy.
This is...
It's funny. You touched on something interesting about the transience of celebrity and how... there is the baby boomers have 60 years of celebrities to go back on, and millennials don't necessarily pay attention to a lot of that stuff. And Glenn Campbell was a significant star for a significant number of years, and we unfortunately got a chance to witness his decline as well. But yeah, so they don't realize that here's a guy who was a major TV star and a recording artist. You don't get both of them anymore, really, per se. But you get people who were on TV doing the Disney route, you know, Christina Aguilera, Britney Spears, Justin Timberlake, they do TV and then they become a musician.
Now we're talking.
Now, yeah, but, okay, I guess you could say that. But, you know, a guy like Glenn Campbell was a real musician. This guy was a member of the Wrecking Crew, the LA group of session musicians who played on an astounding number of records in the 1960s, whether it was the Monkees, the Beach Boys, the Mamas and the Papas, television show themes, commercials. Glenn Campbell was, you know, one of the guitar players who played on all these records. In fact, he was Frank Sinatra's favorite studio guitar player. So Campbell's on all of Frank's biggest and best records from the mid-60s. And then he got a lucky break because, you know, he was a handsome guy and he was personable. And he got this summer replacement show for, here's something the millennials will not know, the Smothers Brothers.
They don't even know what a summer replacement show is because they think that The Bachelor just runs year-round.
you make a very good point, Ro. Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm showing my age again. So he got the summer replacement show and then parlayed it into his own series, a variety series. And you know, he also had major hit records to back these things up. An incredible talent. He's one of these guys, if you slapped strings on a cardboard box and attach it to a yardstick, he could make music with it. He's like that type of musician.
He taught himself, right? So he's like one of those guys that just, he was a farm-raised, humble, rural America born.
Yeah, he was, yeah, exactly. He was the son of a sharecropper from Arkansas. He was one of, was it 11 or 12 kids? You know, there wasn't a lot going around in that family, you know, monetarily. And he learned to play guitar and just developed into an amazing guitarist and a bass player as well as a banjo player. You know, I mentioned bass. When Brian Wilson and the Beach Boys suffered a significant mental and emotional event on tour, Glenn Campbell, because he fit the shirt and he was, you know, he was big enough and he looked like the guy, assumed the role of a touring Beach Boy for about 6 months. And there's actually a couple live recordings out there that he appears on. But he helped them out because he played on their records and they knew him and they trusted him. And he looked the part, too.
Howard, you know, so many of the tributes to him are talking about him as a crossover artist, and was kind of the first of his time, or one of the first, maybe, who was able to play in the country world, but then branch out and play with so many of the other bands that you've just mentioned, the Beach Boys, Sinatra. It didn't matter. He was such a musician of that type that it inspired so many other artists who are now of this generation, even, who know who he is, were inspired by him and reaching out at this time.
I mean, you talk about a very interesting time in music when pop radio played a variety of genres, not just pop music or pop-influenced hip-hop or, you know, pop-influenced dance music, where top 40 radio stations, was it WLS in Chicago was the big, was that the...
As it seemed for a call, that might have been the one, yeah.
Yeah, that's okay. CKLW outside of Detroit, I mean, they would play African-American, you know, rhythm, blues, and soul. They would play country hits. They would play pop hits. You know, the Beatles, Sinatra, and the Supremes would be played next to each other. So Glen Campbell was an artist who could, in that environment, have hit records. Maybe because he had a southern accent. Maybe because he was a kid from Arkansas. That pegged him as a country artist. But, in fact, his music wasn't really country. It was pop. It was light pop.
Yeah.
Yeah, and exactly. Like, and his collaborations with the songwriter Jimmy Webb is a perfect example. Because I take Wichita Lineman. Here's a song that's very pastoral and has an American theme to it, but it's not necessarily a country song. Oh, do I hear it rising in the background?
Yes, you do, yeah. Howard. And this is probably his biggest hit, right?
Lineman for the county. And I drive the main road, searching in the sun for another overload.
See, one of the things that you see there, when you hear that record, things that you can listen for from that era, is you're hearing the swelling strings. He was doing it out of those same studios, as you point out, that Sinatra was working out of, that Dean Martin was working out of, that all of the acts that were doing that kind of big band pop stuff from the 50s and 60s, that is now, you know, had this resurgence, they did it with, he was sort of the young version of that, with enough of a country pop kind of cred to then appear on music stations that were like LS in Chicago, or like GN, as a matter of fact, in Chicago, used to play a couple songs an hour. And Glen Campbell certainly was in that rotation. You had, and then country stations from around the, whether you're down in Memphis or you're down in Nashville or whatever it happens to be.
Mm-hmm. No, you're right. And he was also a pleasant enough guy to get on television. And as we know, and history has proven time and time again, that musicians who get on television have a tendency to, quote, cross over. Once you get in front of the wider audience, as Glen Campbell did, and that could be, you know, Adam Levine from Maroon 5 when he was on The Voice, that certainly blew up his band. So Glen Campbell, by being on television repeatedly and showing that he was a reputable guy by bringing on guests like, you know, whether it was Johnny Cash or even middle-of-the-road artists, you know, like Andy Williams, that he was a guy who could do all those sort of things. I also want to point out something you just mentioned, Ro, about the studios. A number of those artists, including Glen Campbell, recorded at the Capitol Building, the legendary Capitol Building in Hollywood, and that studio is still very active. And, again, Sinatra records some of those great records there. Eddie Cochran and Gene Vincent recorded there. Glen Campbell, some of those great records.
Because you have that's a very famous building, because it looks like a stack of records. That's the first most important thing. But that studio was on so many album covers, right? Mm-hmm. Guys wearing V-neck sweaters standing there, you know, and a fedora standing there in front of a horn section and a string section, and so people got to understand that that's what it was, and so he and I it, like your you know your point he not only and there was a moment too where he was the triple threat. He had a TV show, he had the music career going, and then he got cast against John Wayne in True Grit. Listen to this.
Do you let little girls hoorah you, Cogburn?
Would you mind repeating that, Jaybird?
There's no hoorahing in it. The marshal's working for me.
How much she paying you?
Enough.
Is she paying you $500?
No.
Well, that's what the governor of Texas has put up for this man she calls Cheney. Payment on conviction.
$500?
Yep.
It's very little for a man who's killed a senator.
Bibbs was a little senator.
Hmm.
This is an interesting moment because he was supernova mm-hmm. at that mm-hmm. moment because that was a gigantic hit in theaters.
Yes.
And he had a had a very, spoiler alert, he has a very ignominious end in that Ooh. In that film, and he became just a very sympathetic character because you know he's this good looking guy and he played the nice guy against a really gruff Rooster Cogburn played by John Wayne, who went on to do that again, right? That movie got a sequel,
And I believe Wayne won his Oscar for that film too.
Yeah. So, it was big. And so, in that era, it didn't get much bigger. And then he did Rhinestone Cowboy, which kind of was the beginning of the end of his pop career, right? Because that became so ubiquitous that it was almost, he couldn't live up to it. And the music styles were changing by the mid-1970s. And country was actually, because there were so many radio stations coming online at that point, country was getting segregated out. So to your point, Howard, that you had stations throughout the country that were top 40 radio stations, mm-hmm. they started to thin out their playlists so they would make them very much top 40 within a sound range, right? It would be top 40 rock and roll.
You're definitely a student of the genre. There's no question about it. Yeah, at that point, they started getting consulted to death, and things were they were more streamlined, and they wanted to hit certain demographics, and artists like Glenn Campbell were kind of cut out of it because it didn't work, as particularly 74 rhythm blues and disco, as that started to blow up, kind of pushed a lot of these artists out. But Campbell certainly continued to make a significant living. He unfortunately lived in the tabloids for a while. He had a rather tumultuous marriage to another famous country singer, a woman named Tanya Tucker.
Oh yeah.
They both had run-ins with the law together and separately. There's a very famous mugshot of Mr.
Campbell. Oh yes, he liked to have a few drinks and then get behind the wheel of a car.
He definitely had a problem with substances, and he was very, very honest about it later on when he cleaned up. But he was a nasty drunk and a nasty drug addict, and he admitted that. But he could continue to work, and when something like Branson, Missouri was developed, he was one of these guys who could go and work there. He could also work in Vegas. He had a very dedicated audience, and he was a real professional where he could go on stage and do his thing and continue to do that. But stepping back a bit, songs like Rhinestone Cowboy, which is looked at as kind of a piece of pop cheese, is actually a brilliantly written record, and it's a very sympathetic character. You take another song like Southern Nights, which was another huge, huge hit for him, was not from the same sort of Brill-Building-esque or professional songwriters. It came from a guy named Alan Toussaint, who's a New Orleans songwriter, an African-American who wrote hits for rhythm and blues artists. And this became a hit for a white guy, for a country guy. We got that?
Here it is.
Free as a breeze, not to mention the trees, whistling tunes that you know and love so. Southern nights, just as good even when closed your eyes.
And that was, that Rhinestone Cowboy era where he could make that crossover, because that song sounded like a lot of other pop music of that era, whether it was Jim Croce or other,
yes,
sort of singer-songwriters that were doing, even like, sort of the, Leon Sayer, right? Leo Sayer.
Leo Sayer, yes.
There's Leon Russell and Leo Sayer. Leo Sayer was doing songs like that.
Guys, mind you.
Yeah, exactly. And even Paul Simon had songs that sounded like that. And so it was like, there, he found a way to be in all that. And again, he was one of those guys that if you needed a badass guitarist, they called Glenn Campbell. Didn't matter who it was. And you talk to guitar, I can't even count on two hands the number of rock stars that I've talked to over the years in interviews and talked about who are guitarists and who are your influences or who are your favorite guitarists. And I mean, almost to a man, it has been Glenn Campbell's come up in that list.
And I'm fascinated by how many different bands he participated, he joined in with, or he collaborated with, or even recorded with. And it didn't seem like he got a billing for everything he did. Maybe he just doing it for the love of the music. Is that the way he was?
Well, actually, you know, he did it for scale or double scale because that's the way it
went to work. Back
then, particularly studio guys. You know, if you wanted a guy like Glenn Campbell on guitar or Hal Blaine on drums, you know, back in L.A., you paid for them because you wanted the best. Mm-hmm. And those guys made decent livings doing that, you know. They could be on at any given moment within the top 20, 12 records.
Right, exactly.
So that was their living. But also, like with Glenn, even back in the 60s when he was trying to make a solo inroads, and his association with the Beach Boys helped him out because he cut an amazing record that wasn't a hit. And it was a Brian Wilson composition called Guess I'm Done. And it's this beautiful, beautiful record that Carl Wilson could have sang, Brian could have sang, but Glenn Campbell did such a stunning job with this. I don't know. Do you guys have that one available?
Yeah, we will very quickly here, but then we got to run.
Yeah. Yeah. If we can bring that one up, it was just.
The way I act don't seem like me. I'm not on top like I used to be. Like give in when I know I should be strong. I still give in even though I know it's wrong. Know it's wrong. I guess I'm dumb, but I don't care.
All right, Glenn Campbell. Howard, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Well, Anna, thank you guys very much. It's a pleasure.
Thanks, Howard. Thank you very much.
Glenn Campbell dead at the age of 81. All right, Justin Coffin is just stepping in. By the way, happy birthday to you, Justin.
Is it your birthday?
It's not, but thank you.
Oh,
happy
that's right. It's not Picasso's.
It's Dustin Hoffman's birthday. Isn't that who we're talking to?
Dustin Hoffman. I thought you were still playing with the fact that it's not the Picasso anniversary either for another week.
3,000 toothpicks.
It's my mother's birthday today, too.
Oh, happy birthday,
it is. It is actually.
You said that
birthday.
In the way that you're like,
you're
oh.
like just remembering that at
Holy
this moment.
Crap,
and it's 7
birthday.
O'clock.
I was making a Dustin Hoffman joke. And, oh, it's mom's birthday.
Yeah. Oh, you got. I hope you got. You better.
It's already
that.
Been. Oh no, okay, I didn't. Trust me. I'm,
trust you.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Happy birthday, 80 years old, Dustin Hoffman, and yeah, your mom probably not a day over 45.
Yes,
that's right.
Right. Exactly.
Even though that math doesn't.
Oh,
work.
But she's she is. She's been dying since the day I've known her, so it doesn't matter. She's one of those people. She's had a brain tumor now for 60 years.
Yeah. God, I hope not.
Yeah. Well, she wouldn't. I mean, that's the point.
Yeah.
She's like, she every day of her life, and God love her, but every day of her life, she's dying of another disease. I just don't, you know.
Happy birthday, Rose.
Well, happy
Mom.
Birthday, yeah. We love you.
We do. We hope you have a really great birthday.
I say that with love. I mean, I it just happens to be the truth. Yeah. So, anyway, she'd tell you. She does want it on her tombstone. I told you I wasn't feeling well.
Make sure everybody knows. Right. I suffered through a lot of things.
I told you.
I told you I wasn't feeling well.
I told you.
All right. Anyway, the point here is that
that's somebody else's birthday.
It is every right, exactly. And it's time for Justin Coffin Show. What's coming up on the program?
Lou Manfredini's here tonight. He's my guest.
I mentioned his name.
I know he's my guest at the big table tonight.
Nice.
Yeah, to talk about home improvement, doing it yourself. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so much DIY paid to the arts and culture, but I think that the biggest DIY hero of Chicago would be Lou Manfredini.
No question.
No question. He's going to be in studio. Also, Katrina Markoff, who's the CEO of Vosges Chocolate.
Sure.
And also Robbie Foulkes, the Americana Roots country performer, will be here in studio, and he'll be performing live. We'll talk about Glenn Campbell and other stuff.
Oh, yeah. That is – it really – I wanted to cover that as much as we could
you
today.
You did a great job.
Because he really was a special contributor to American culture.
I didn't know he was part of that Wrecking Crew.
That's where he got famous. That's why he got famous.
It's the second or third reference to that because we had Leland Sklar, who's the bass player, was in studio last week with Judith Owens' band, and he talked about coming out of the Wrecking Crew as well. So it's just interesting to see
that
group of session musicians that changed the course of American music forever.
Well, so I didn't realize he played with the Beach Boys either.
Yeah.
So there was another...
Yeah, he was a Beach Boy. He played the role of Brian Wilson for 6 months, and nobody seemed to notice a difference.
Because Brian just didn't show up, apparently.
Well, Brian had a little bit of it. He had an issue.
Yeah. Other issues, but still, quite the career.
Yeah.
All right. Very good. All right.
Have a good night.
Take it away, my friend.